All right, everybody, welcome back to the That's Criminal podcast. Before we get started today, I got a couple of things I want to cover. First is that next month I'll be at the Books of the Beach reader conference in St. Pete's Beach, Florida. The Cerrado Resort is hosting, and it'll be September 8th to the 10th, full weekend of talking books, reader and writer panels, and a huge signing event on that Saturday. I did it last year, ton of fun, great people put it on. And the link, I believe tickets are probably still available. Link will be in the show notes. Second, hit 40K on the first draft of the new Ty Benhoff book. No spoilers, other than to say, I've mentioned her before, but Billy West, that character I came up with, she is stealing the scenes from Ty. I'm not sure how he feels about it. But she has been a lot of fun to write, and I think you guys are really going to like her. And I will say, not giving much more away, but the city of Jakarta will be very happy when this novel comes to an end, because we are very hard on the infrastructure so far. So we're going to try not to destroy anything more than we have to. Things being what they are, the city of Jakarta is never going to be the same. So I apologize for that in a fictional sense. Also, Blood Red Ivory, doing great. Continued thank you. I can't thank any of you guys enough for the great reviews, comments, the way Monsef narrated the book. You guys seem really, really happy with him. So continued thanks for all the support. And then finally, I found this out earlier this week, but did you know that anytime you like and subscribe to the TCP, to That's Criminal, an internet troll literally gets hit by a dump truck. It is a true internet fact. You can look it up yourself. I did a lot of research to vet this, but it is true. If you like and subscribe to TCP, we are literally making the world a better place, one internet troll at a time. So you sign up that you like the show. If you give me a 5-star rating, I've heard that they actually just detonate, and all the trolls within a surrounding radius, they're all taken out with them. So you like and subscribe, we get one for one. But if you give me a 5-star rating, we'll actually be wiping them out in groups, which, again, it's a purge. It's a digital purge, and I think it makes everybody feel good when they do it. So thank you for all the likes, subscribes, and comments. We're making the world a better place. And that's it. Let's get into it. Today, I'm excited. I get to talk to Bill Livesey. Bill spent 30 years as a game warden in Maine. 20 of those years, he was spent in covert operations, working undercovers. His book, Let's Go for a Ride, covers his biography and his years in the undercover world. A great read. I highly recommend it. So thank you, Bill, for joining me. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
All right. For some reason, your sound just dropped out a little bit.
Oh, great.
There you are. I got you. Now I got you.
Okay.
All right. So thanks for coming on. I really enjoyed the book, Let's Go for a Ride. To get us started, tell us about the life of a game warden.
Well, so every state's a little bit different, but in the state of Maine, a game warden basically has the same authority as a state trooper, and they get a district to patrol. So your regular field game warden has an area of X amount of towns within a county that he patrols, usually a lot of rural areas for Maine, that is. And then you just have that authority. So when, there's a trooper going to a domestic, and so it's not always fishing game. That's our focus, obviously. But, trooper's in a fight with a guy, or he's dealing with somebody, or a town police officer. And of course, towns are far and few between as far as PDs go. There's police departments, in several of our big towns, but there's a lot of rural woods towns in the state of Maine. That's why, the layout, the demographics of it. So you, as a game warden, you could find yourself going to some guy is threatening to shoot his wife, or it could be a variety of different things. But mostly a game warden focuses on the fishing game. And we have 100 guys in the state of Maine that are just passionate about the job. I love the job. It was the best job going. And everybody has a different skill set. So you have different game wardens with different, everybody has their little niche, whether it's, Maine Warden Service is in charge of anybody lost in the woods. So if they would be, if you were a canine handler involved in search and rescue, that could be your big thing, that your big focus. And we have a dog team, we have a dive team for recovery of, drowned victims and those kinds of things. Everybody has their passion, everybody has their focus. We're all passionate about the job, but everybody has their little niche. We've got some really good woods wise game wardens that are very talented in just reading the outdoors of whether there's been a man through this rural remote section of the woods, and just being able to track well and all that kind of thing. And just a variety of guys. And my particular passion, I used to love to catch night hunters at night, and of course, we're all competitive. I think I shared that with you before. A bunch of game wardens, you got to catch more night hunters than the guy next to you, And that was the exciting part of the, because I signed up to catch poachers, and that was the that's always been my little niche. Me and another game warden would hook up, and we just tried to go out there and slay them, and just like same focus as a law enforcement officer when you're passionate about getting DWIs or OUIs or working drugs. And like just any law enforcement officer can get into his niche, whether it's, narcotic unit or whatever, same idea.
You find what you like and you chase it. One thing I didn't notice, and one thing, well, after a few years on a job, you start to figure it out. But coming up, you a lot of people probably don't think about it, but you guys, A, are usually out there Lone Ranger, your backup. Maybe you can get back up. Maybe they need a helicopter to get to you, maybe depending on where you're working. But everybody you run into is already armed. So every interaction you have, you're already armed. And like for that perspective, as a I was a city cop, I might have to wait for backup. I might need to, if something happens, I might need to hold out, 5, 7 minutes maybe. You there it, with that game warden service, depending on where you are, there is no backup. It's literally one riot, one ranger.
Well, there's negatives, there's pros and cons with that mindset, because we're going into every group that we're dealing with that's has a firearm and they could be intoxicated or whatever. So you'd think a game warden would be a little more, you watch Cops, and all of a sudden there's a firearm, everybody's on point. Well, the negative side for a game warden, they're so used to dealing with firearms, so used to like hoping the gun's loaded, because it's a violation to be driving around shooting things out the window of your truck. And instead of the opposite, where you're being a little more cautious when somebody has a firearm and a little more on point, we're a little too relaxed sometimes. And people bury bodies in the woods. You think it's a regular hunter that's just going out to kill a couple of birds, and all of a sudden, he's acting a little funny, and he's here you're dealing with fugitives. For whatever reason, they love to run to either real build up areas or very rural areas. So you got guys coming from other states that are on the run and with warrants for their arrest, and they want to find somewhere to be off the grid, and then who stumbles onto them but a game warden out in the middle of nowhere, So that's there's actually I wrote about a fugitive in the book. Now that we talk about that, but yeah, so it's been a great career. Loved it. Loved every moment of it. Even the low points, there was always a lot of excitement with the job. And when I was asked to become part of the covert unit, I was only a game warden for about 6 years when a investigator asked me to thought I might have a skill set to be involved in that unit, and that really worked out.
And that's that kind of like you say, that skill set or that niche that law enforcement officers find themselves in. Undercover is, I think it's probably one of the more eclectic ones, because it's not exactly something that you can teach. Like you have to, the people who are really good at it are naturals at playing that role and not seeing themselves. They have to get into that role and be so comfortable in it. 'Cause I very briefly, I did it, like maybe buy coke off a guy in the street or something like that. But I knew that I could not be planted in a group for a long term, just 'cause every time I did it, I felt like I was playing make believe, and I knew that it wouldn't last. Like I just knew in the back of my head, I'm like, this guy thinks I'm a cop already, and I haven't even talked to him yet, you know? So how did you end up getting drafted into that world?
My first chapter kind of reveals that I went through a life transformation mode where I was actually heading for the other side. And my father wasn't all the time, but he got involved in dealing drugs, and actually had my uncle murdered. And so I and And in that lifestyle of things going on, I took a hard turn into the whole drug world scene. And my mom owns a bar, and they were the guys that kind of were my mentors, taking me hunting, showing me how to poach. And some of them were on the edge, but some of them were pretty, involved in doing things the wrong way. And so that was one of the reasons I was approached, because I already kind of lived that life. I went through a major transformation, 5.5 hours in a polygraph, bearing my soul, because it was very competitive to get into being a game warden. I was raised in Pennsylvania, went to Maine when I was 19, went to college, and knew it was going to be a challenge to, 2,000 applicants and 10 positions. And it's flip-flop now because of what's going on in law enforcement and, people being hard on anybody in law enforcement. So it's not just, state police and regular local PDs having a hard time hiring qualified people. It's every law enforcement branch,
Yeah,
So
there's a
anyway,
mountain.
I was approached by an investigator that knew my background. And he's like, and I think I told you this last time we talked, the movie Departed. That's kind of why I like the movie, not because the undercover guy gets popped at the end. I hated that part, but because that in the movie Departed, the guy kind of had a little bit of a background, and he obviously infiltrating the mob, and I think Whitey Bulger was the kind of the basis of that movie. And same idea. There's a big, huge psychological cost to undercover work, though. I can remember going to my kids' ball games and like being at a distance because, Maine is one big small town. Even though I worked other states, with having an MOU with another state where I could work undercover in that capacity and, be covered as far as legalities go. Still, you're always walking into a restaurant in a hub location in the state of Maine and wondering if there's a relative or somebody that knows you. So you're always, you talked about, I don't know if I could be dropped off with somebody for a week without tripping up. Well, my wife, she was just in here a minute ago. She would tell you that I changed. I would go through this mental process. I'd get real quiet before I was going on a case, and I'd be living with these guys a week at a time during the hunting seasons. And depending how long we'd ran a case, if we ran it a couple hunting seasons, or if we ran it, if they're killing so much and so much was going on, drug dealing or whatever, because it's like with everything, it's not just your redneck guy. We didn't work the crew that just went out and popped a deer once in a while or a moose. It was the crews that were a little more hardcore, lots of complaints, lots of convicted felons just doing whatever they wanted, but they're also dealing drugs. So between going out and killing stuff, we're doing, sales with whatever the drug, whatever the situation. So anyway, to wrap that up psychologically, I don't care if you're infiltrating biker gangs, the mob, infiltrating any group, there's a psychological toll on the operative because you are befriending them. I mean, I was, even though the families are so dysfunctional on that side of life, there's, and you, every cop knows what I'm talking about. So you just see the dysfunction, guys screwing around on their, on their wives and their girlfriends, and if they even have wives or whatever. And it's just a mess. Their lives are a mess. That whole group that you're working, and now you're trying to, I tried to have certain things in my cover that would protect me a little bit from like having to go to stripper joints. And I'd work my cover a certain way. Like, hey man, I'm all about killing stuff. And, I'd have a thing to say if they wanted me to snort a line or something. I've always had a thing to go. I had a bunch of go-to lines, where I could describe the drips going down the back of my throat, and they knew, hey, he's been there before. So I, so like you were talking about knowing what to say and what and how to avoid certain things when you're working undercover, and I was tested. I don't know how many times I was tested. Hey, you're killing tonight, you're doing this and you're doing that. And it's but the other part of the psyche was I would always focus every person I worked, every group I infiltrated, I would try to focus on something I liked about the guy because you want it to look genuine. And some of the guys I worked some vile guys, but some of them are likable. They got a big issue, whatever that is, dealing drugs, killing, stealing, whatever.
Yeah.
But there's usually something you can like about somebody, whether they, I used to wrestle and play football. I would key into, hey man, you wrestle, blah, blah, blah. Something that you could grab onto where the relationship would be real. And that's the other part of the psyche that I was talking about when we spoke earlier before. The psyche of befriending somebody and then kind of being a Judas.
Oh
So
yeah.
you become part of their friend gang. And even though you're the good guy and they're the bad guy and you're documenting all the crimes you see, the longer you're with them, I don't care. Like I said, I don't care if it's the mob. I don't care if it's a biker gang that you're infiltrating. I don't care if it's just, some left-wing Antifa group or whatever it is, whatever you're infiltrating, you can't help but there's a psychological toll. When it comes down, all the warrants are hit,
Yeah.
and all of a sudden they find out Bill's not their friend and that
Yeah.
he was
That
the
hurts.
Judas. Oh,
Yeah,
yeah. But
that
there's a
hurts.
psychological effect on the operative too. It's not
Yeah.
just the bad guy that's crushed. The operative's like, oh man, he deserves everything he's getting, but it's the way about it. And that's when part of the motive of why I wrote the book was we did a case in Allegash, Maine, and I was always asked, hey, you ought to write a book, just not just because of the transformation that took place as a youngster and then you went in the direction of being a law enforcement officer and all that. They wanted me to write for other reasons, because of some events that have happened. And there's a lot of things in this book that are just they're funny, and there's just some
Yeah.
funny, there's just some interesting things, as you can imagine,
Yeah.
but
And that's.
it's also, it's like sour grapes that when somebody gets caught in that fashion, and the pride factor is so huge and with these people that are involved in, like, say your guy that's just killing whatever he wants, and he thinks he's in his mind, his ego, and then the thousands and thousands of comments as an undercover guy, like mocking people that do things legal. I don't know if you remember Goodfellas, where they laughed at everybody that obeyed the law, and they were millionaires because they were just taken, and and
Yep. Anybody
it
got in
kind of
their way?
reminds
Yeah.
you remember that.
Yeah.
So these guys would just go hours and hours and hours of whether we're roaming around killing deer at night on people's front lawns. And that's a lot of these felons I explained before would do that. They'd shoot deer on people's front lawns just because they felt safe. That wouldn't
Yeah.
be a game warden setting things up, And but anyway, the thousands and thousands of comments of how stupid police officers are, how stupid game wardens are, and how they'll never get caught. And them killing the moose and then handing me the shell and like laughing how stupid I'll never get caught again, or if they've been caught before or whatever. And little do they know they're handing the undercover guy, the evidence of
Evidence.
them. And
Yeah,
it's just
and so you still got the smirk on their face. They think you're agreeing with them. You're just like, oh,
right.
this affidavit's gonna be
Oh yeah.
tight.
And
But yeah,
that's
I
it.
when you talk about that sour grapes and the way you compartmentalize, you got to find some kind of hook that'll keep you in that relationship. But I remember many times sitting at arraignment, when everybody, you got 15 guys you just took down. They all have a copy of the indictment in their hands, and they're all handcuffed, sitting together, looking through, and they're trading names. They're like, "What is this guy? Is no, is this guy?" And then when they all come to a consensus, you see them all start nodding together, and they're looking around the room trying to figure out who's not here.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute, there's
Was that
somebody still
John?
sleeping right now. Yeah.
But so back to your question of motivating, I think you mentioned why you wrote the book, and one of the motivating factors was that and I briefly touched on it. So we did an investigation in Allegash, Maine, and a particular politician didn't know about the case. Well, we don't tell anybody about our case. We don't even share it. Because of accidental slip-ups, somebody's got a babysitter, even in the law enforcement community, and they're
Yep.
related to somebody being worried. There's just all these reasons why
Seen that happen.
other
Seen it
game
happen.
wardens, no, we don't even tell other game wardens. If I'm comfortable with the game warden, I'll say, hey, I'm going to be in your area, and that's kind of how we did it. That was always up to the operative what he would share. But anyway, we had a politician get very involved in one of our cases that we took down. And so he was going to do away with our undercover unit. He was a head of appropriations. He was a very powerful man. He's been and of course I took out all the names of the bad guys in my book except his.
Except his, that's right. That's right.
So he was the only bad guy. I left his name in there, and him and the fake writer. So what he did, what we were surmising he did, because it was 2 years after the case, he's trying to get this law passed to do away with an undercover, our whole undercover unit, and but so all of a sudden we find out there's going to be a hit piece on our department. So all the biggest paper in the state of Maine, which is the Portland Press Herald, did a hit piece on our department, and they made me a star, but in a really bad way. And the sad part is it was very well written. So it was well written to the point where I'm reading it and saying, this guy needs to be fired.
Yeah, what's wrong with
Now,
this guy?
and I didn't think they could get away with that. I always thought that there was accountability, and this was before the term fake news was ever brought up. This was released in May 8th of 2016. So it was before, the Trump Hillary debates that went on, and all the fake news accusations that went out there over the, after that. So before that, I was on 26 years at the time, and I'm like, I didn't know they could just totally, make up facts completely. I've been around long enough to know that things get embellished when you even tell them about an investigation that you did, when they call you up and ask about different circumstances, and then reading about it and seeing it a little embellished. But I've never seen out and out totally made up news, and that's what they did to us. And so then there was a lot of, on both sides of the aisle, you had, they had all kinds of accusations where the game warden was giving people drugs, the undercover warden was giving people drugs to shoot the first deer, and get the bad guy, excuse me, the undercover guy. That was probably one of the heaviest things they said, because it got everybody mad,
Oh,
was
yeah.
that the undercover guy shot the first deer illegally to get the other guys to shoot deer. Well, that's
Yeah,
never happened in any of my cases, and it's
you
just
wouldn't get
like,
past the search warrant with that. Judge would never let that go.
Exactly. And
Yep.
I've had, who knows how many DAs over the years, and how many judges have looked at my cases, and they've, the two that went to the Supreme Court in Maine, and one even a little bit beyond the next step into the federal system, they never even came close to an entrapment issue. And so that 6,000 word hit piece was bad enough, but then past cases that I had, they would call the paper and say, hey, that undercover guy was the same guy that got me. So then they'd write up his story,
Oh, yeah.
and he was a drunkard. And anybody that knows anything about undercover work, it's your mind is your weapon. You're not going to shoot your way out of a, when you're in a big hunting camp with 10 guys, you're not shooting your way out of a situation. It's all, you want clarity of your mind. So the whole accusation of me being a drunkard while I'm working, just
That's a
one
problem.
thing after they just, it was, but it was very, it was written very well. So it was very like, how can I say, believable, like very articulated. And, the writer was a Pulitzer, award-winning, journalist.
Yeah, so if you could, why don't we start with that case and then just walk me through how like how so you've got a case, you close a case, and then this politician, did you wrap up one of his family or something like that, or was he just
We were confused a little bit about that. I mean, he's been somebody that's been a, he's what we call old school corruption politician. Like he would call a judge. We know of circumstances where, he'd call a judge and say, hey, that DWI on that guy, or it's OUI in Maine, and then it would go away. You know what I mean? But
Oh yeah, old school.
nowadays you can't get away with that as easily nowadays. So he tried doing that same thing. As soon as we did the takedown, I forget, we did like I think five warrants in that case and a few knock and talks, those kinds of things. And
So what were they doing? What were you in with them on?
oh, these guys were just, they were involved in a lot of things. They were suspected of, and some things went by the, they were suspected of like burning the gates of the North Woods, and
Okay.
that gates, to make you understand this, this isn't a gate like a gate like a like what you would visualize as a gate. This is like a house. This is like somebody's house that there's a gate there. And the main North Main Woods is a very rural, it's paper company land basically. And they regulate who's coming in and who's coming out of there. It's their land. But Maine is not posted like a lot of states where a lot of land is posted. These big paper companies, they let people in, but they want to know, and they're running these big logging trucks on these roads, and they also, want to be able to run the logging trucks and know who's where and that kind of thing. And they're also maintaining the roads. So anyway, they charge gate fees. And anybody can go on these big paper company, and not all the paper company land in Maine is gated off, but the North Main Woods is there's big portions of it gated off. Well, locals in areas where these little old backwoods poaching towns, Allegash is one of those towns. You'd be called a moose towner. So it's they have like their own language. It's like an Irish. It's Maine is very unique that way. There's a few different dialects. Well, Allegash is very unique, and just a unique town. Well, part of that is there's a lot of guides in Allegash that are doing things right. Well, they don't want to tell on somebody else because that's how they get burned out, kind of thing. So there's that. There's been some real situations where people have been burned out. So when things get out of hand, it's the gentle, subtle discuss with the local game warden. Something needs to be done. These guys are out of hand. So basically, it was basically just a group of a hub of people. There were three targets in the case, and actually originally two targets in the case. And we left one guy out because we thought there was a falling out. Turns out that they mended their relationship to a degree, and the so we we included all three main targets of the case, but they were just your basic guys that were just out of control killing stuff.
And just see it and shoot it.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And the one guy, the one guy was revoked. He didn't even have a license. And this is all Class D stuff. Well, most fish and game violations are Class D. But the media really played into that. This hit piece really played. I mean, we got 39,000 in fines out of them, which is, a substantial amount of fine money. And and only a handful of the people did jail time. And but that's not the point. The point was, it's just total lawlessness. Is that mindset, and yes, we opened up an undercover case, and our undercover, we just don't randomly pick people to work. There are people that are totally predisposed. I mean, we make sure that there's predisposition, so that's why there's never been an entrapment issue. We look at it as a committee. We look at a case, and this guy's been convicted or caught and is still doing it. Sometimes we'll do what's called a probe. And in this case, we actually did a probe just to see if there was any, and I did the probe personally because I was the operative that did the case. And first day I met the guy, he's telling me about how he was in, Washington State and different states doing all this killing. And he just and he dealt marijuana on the side. The other guy dealt marijuana. Well, now it's legal in Maine, but back then it was.
Things change.
Yeah, things change. So, and the one target was accused of stealing other people's grows, and that's pretty common in the whole marijuana trade thing. One guy just go ahead.
So you guys run your probe, they're still active. And so were they did they front as like guides or something? Did you and how'd you make your way into that crew? Did you just hang with them until you got in with them, or was it one of those things that they were running a pseudo guide service and you're able to
No,
jump in that way?
that's here. There's two things about working those two different types. So guides, the guides were the ones that were upset because these guys are doing everything wrong, and they were doing it under the whole friends. And friends would leave them a little, give them a little money if they came up and did a moose hunt from their house, and they assisted them, basically were guiding them. And the one guy probably wouldn't take money, but the other guys would. But one of the targets actually in the case was a very jolly guy. He was quite the alcoholic. I mean, he could put down, very rarely can somebody put down a couple of more than one 30 pack in a 5 hour block. I mean, this guy was
Whoa.
this is
That's impressive.
he may be the heaviest drinker I've ever worked. This one fellow in the case.
Sharp as a tack, I bet.
He was actually comical to be around, and that was one of the things I would latch on to. He was the life of the party kind of guy, and his house was that way, a party house. The problem is it was that whole culture of, guys dealing drugs and killing stuff, and it was that crowd. So anyway, they pulled me in, so they weren't technically guides. But back to what you said, guides are the easiest. Because there's a money exchange, they want your money. They're the easiest to get in with, but they're the hardest to, because Maine, we've had an effective unit, and Maine has been worked at that capacity for a while. Guides are a little more cautious of everybody they take in.
Yeah,
So
that's a
you picture
livelihood.
yourself being a guide, and you're doing things wrong. You look at every potential client as a potential undercover guy.
Oh,
And you
yeah.
keep that in the back of your head, because I've worked a few of those. So it took the trust. I guess I should say it like this. It takes a lot longer to get to that trust, because the bad guys, it's undercover work isn't that technical. It's being liked and being trusted. And you don't always have to be liked if it's a commercial thing. If I'm buying and selling animal parts or drugs or whatever it is, you don't have to be liked as much, but you always have to be trusted. So to get to that level of trust with a guide, sometimes it's a process. But to get to the level, if like these family groups or these groups of felons, they're not guides or whatever, that I've infiltrated over the years, it's almost like the first night I'm with them, they're out killing. It's almost,
Wow.
so it might take that long curve for a guide. A licensed guide in the state of Maine. For a non-guide, once you're in,
Yeah.
it's harder to get in. So did I make that clear? So
Nope.
with a guide, it's easy to get in because they want your money. It's
Yeah.
sometimes just a phone call. Hey, you doing hound hunts for bear? Yeah. Well, what do you charge? $1,800 for a hound hunt, blah, 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 and you're in.
Yeah.
Well, now picture you're trying to infiltrate some group of guys that only hunt with each other, never hunt with anybody else, and you're trying to infiltrate that group. Well, it's harder to get in with that group, but once you're in, and I mean literally, once you're in that day, I'm usually seeing everything I need to see, like bam. So that's
Yeah.
the opposite of how, if you're working, at least licensed guides
Right.
versus
So
regular guys.
that initial infiltration, do you have a guy like on the hook, or do you just kind of make sure you're at the right place at the right time and just charm your way in, so to speak?
Yeah, it's a charming. We've used all kinds of tactics. Like I had one that the tactic was a really good tactic, but the only reason it took a couple of years to work in, because there was a falling out between groups. So we had this guy that was killing all these deer and selling them to these non-residents. So the idea was to infiltrate the non-resident crew. Not really work them, but be there when this guy showed up to sell him deer. And because that's a commercial aspect, so that's a case we would take on if we have information of something like that's going on. Well, here the guy was engaged to the one guy's daughter, and there was this huge falling out, so it took like
Uh-oh.
3 seasons to get in. I had to basically break away from the non-residents to finally get in with this guy. And actually we have that story in the As
In the
one of the
book.
stories in the book, and it
Don't do
was an
business with
intense
family.
situation.
You don't do business with family.
Right? He was the same guy that tried to kill a guy, and I was still in with him. So then they sent me back in to buy another deer off him, and didn't end up getting him to confess all about it. But his daughter was going to be his alibi, and she told me the whole skinny. And of course, he burnt the guy's house down that he was trying to kill, and so we ended up, when we did the takedown, we had the fire marshals. It's a separate unit in the state of Maine that deals with arson. And we had them tag along, and of course, you know, she basically, you know, puked it all up and confessed to, because you know, I had everything of what she was gonna testify
That's right. Just need a little corroboration.
to.
So these
Yeah.
guys, and Allagash, if I got that right. So you get in with them and they're just dusting anything that moves. You collect your time, build your case, and then you take them off. And the state rep was pissed because he didn't know what was going on in his district.
Yeah, there's some weird things there. I mean, we found out, well, this representative has a reputation of being a little different, and then we found a lot of weird pornography doing the search warrants on the one guy that he really took a fancy to for some reason. So there's that. We're wondering if that has any connection, because he actually was a waterway ranger. We have guys up on the Allagash waterway, like overseeing campsites and stuff like that. And he got caught night hunting a moose, and he was fired, the
The
same one of the
ranger hunting the
targets of the
moose.
case. Yeah. And so we wondered if there was a connection that this representative might have helped him get that job in the past. But he really, he used a legislative letterhead to the judge to get the guy's sentence reduced. Nothing worked. Basically, the DA's office, first off, that representative called up our colonel and said, "Hey, this is blah, 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 you know, dump these cases." And of course, initially, when we did the search warrants, we only give a guy one summons just to get him to the court because we had all kinds of charges. So he's like, "This is nothing, dump it." Well, he called the DA's office and tried to get him to dump all the crimes. So the DA's office told him to pound sand. Our colonel, and I should mention that the colonel and my direct supervisors, and this doesn't always happen in every agency, they totally had my back. I
I was
mean,
actually gonna say the Congress starts calling, and I was just proud the DA didn't back. I was I,
right?
but for that, that's a lot of pressure on people,
Well, a
especially in
lot of pressure.
that prosecutor's office. I'm surprised that you had me at that one. I'm like, hey, good job.
Joe Wilkinson was our colonel at the time, and just to show how much pressure, and I've known some of this information, he had a game planned with all the lieutenants to lay off 20 guys. So true, the state police and the Maine Warden Service, we just got our a raise increase like a couple of months before this story broke. So he was prepared because this dirty politician was, you know, head of appropriations and very involved in monies. Our colonel didn't know if he was going to say, "Come up with your own million to fund that raise." So they were making plans if they had to lay off 20 of our guys, so there was a lot at stake. So the colonel really, you know, without saying a lot, you know, he had to protect the department. You know, me, you know, I want him to call out the corrupt guys and say what he is, you know,
That's an extra subject.
right. So, you know, yeah, exactly. So the colonel and my direct supervisors, they really had my back. And I'll tell you, it got really sticky when you had both sides of the aisle coming out saying, "What do we got, an undercover guy that shoots stuff and to get the other guy?" You know, that would be like, that's like the definition of entrapment. You know, that would be like the FBI coming to somebody and saying, "Hey, you want to make a lot of money? You drive truck. Why don't you go down to Mexico and we'll arrange it so you make 100 extra grand, you know,
Exactly. And now we're going to
every
charge
run."
you for
You know,
it.
it's they totally laid it out, you know, that hit piece was very powerful. So we had actually they had congressional hearings over this. And
And it was
so,
never corroborated. Like, did you guys even get a say? Did they even bring you guys in?
well, we did like 3 or 4 days. They brought me in, and we, of course, our spokesperson for our department and our colonel and other supervisors at times were used to, you know, clarify. I mean, they dug really deep. They went to a case that I previously had that went to the Supreme Court and misquoted the judges as saying my actions were repugnant. You know, they left out the fact that they weren't talking about me. And then the next sentence, when they were talking about me, saying, but this warden did everything he could to avoid committing a crime. They left that sentence out. And
Wow.
they, you know, it was such a case of fake news that it was very hard and very disgusting. You know, they had guys at the end of my driveway with ARs, you know, to make my wife feel a little better, because Facebook just lit up, you know, the opinion sections on those paper articles where people are like, where's this guy live? And then people would speak
Oh,
up. I know where he lives. And, you know,
so you get doxxed, you got to move, all that great stuff,
right,
walking around.
right.
Yeah. So, and to think about this, like, yeah, I could see a journalist, you know, a journalist and the state rep, fine. But that article has to go through the editor process, has to go. It's oh man, the level of just assholeness right there.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. It was pretty hard to take. I tried to hold the paper accountable, and I tried to legally hold them accountable, and found out, you know, where I'm a public figure, I'm in the exact same category as a movie star or as a
yep.
politician. And as you know, the First Amendment gives a lot more leeway for the media to go after a public figure. You know, and we you know, I think we talked about
Fair
it before,
game.
that young man that sued CNN for the fake news that you know,
oh,
because
yeah, the kid on the mall,
yes.
What was like, yeah, I would love to know how much money that kid made. Is it
yeah.
like,
and it was just, it's just justice to see if they have the guts to print a totally fake story, there needs to be accountability, because
yep.
people think when the story's written that it's got to be true. And you know, and of course, when I found out that I had to prove actual malice, like they actually intentionally wrote a false story to specifically, you know, trash me and trash my character, I had to realize that it was an uphill battle. And even though I had a lot of attorneys approach me that wanted me to pay up some money to, there were some attorneys that thought they could do it because of like the situation with misquoting the Supreme Court of Maine, like they knew,
yeah, oof.
They knew what they were saying was incorrect, and it was just a way to, you know, to pile on all these, you know, negative things about how I operated
yeah.
the case.
And so. And that's a hard bar. That's a very high bar to set, especially with all the restrictions of a courtroom. But it, I mean, it's just that's just like the height of. You know, the cost of law enforcement, you know, they can say anything about you they want, and we're all used to being trashed. That's just part of
yeah.
the game. But when you do it to that level with
right.
political sponsorship,
right,
that's just
every law enforcement officer knows that you got to take it on the chin a lot
yep.
through your career. And
yep.
Again, my this, you know, the covert doing it 20 years was tough psychologically. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. If you're going to be a covert operative, the problem is you get really crafted at it after 10 years. But by 10 years, depending on how big of an area you're in, if you're in a big inner city area, if you're in an area with millions of people, you know, I met different operatives from Texas, different states that geographically with large populations, you know, even down here in Florida, you know, there's places, but in Maine, you know, you got your dog hunters. They're a very tight knit group of like bear hunters, hound hunters for, you know, they run plots or run whatever specific dog. That group is very tight knit. And if you've got a really bad apple that you're trying to work in that capacity, you know, that group knows itself.
Yep.
It's just like some of your narcotic groups. They know, and that's why your different mob family groups were hard to infiltrate, because it's family, and you know they're whacking
oh, yeah.
their own family.
Yeah, I had last week I had Carmine Imbrale on, and I'd never thought of it, but he was explaining growing up on Staten Island, and it, basically it's the hometown of all five mob families. And it was like, you know, as a kid getting yelled at by the leader of the Colombo crime family. And he's just, and it's like, he's reporting it like he's getting scolded by his grandma. I'm like, it was such a perspective. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. But yeah, up there in Maine, I mean, there's only so long that you can work locally until everybody's like, hey, that's the UC guy.
And you know, when I say Maine's one big small town, and granted, I've worked other states with an, you know, with an agreement, but like there's family everywhere. You know, you picture an average case, you know, 20, 30 people are going to know who you are by the time the case is over. Let's just say a small number. And we've had cases already that involve 70 people. Well, they got family spread out all over the state of Maine. And I really, in the days of Facebook, and then I'd find out my I'm there posing with an illegal bear or an illegal deer, and I'm on somebody's Facebook
It's
that
like,
I work,
uh-oh.
and they're on that person's Facebook on the new case I'm working. And no, it's a wonder, you know, and I was called out a few times because our unit has been effective. And all of a sudden, hey, why hasn't Bill killed anything? You know, one of those situations, and the room gets quiet. And I talk a little bit about that in my book, a different about 50% of the cases I worked, there'd come a time when that round table discussion, when I wasn't there, said, you know, Bill, you know, he hasn't really done much.
Always around, always around, just
He's
never
always
pulling the
around
trigger.
to, yeah.
Never pulling that
So, you know, I had a few cases where they never would let me pull the trigger. I have had some just obsessed guys where I'd be like messing around with a gun a little too long for them and they couldn't stand it and rip the gun right out of my hand and shoot the critter, you know. And
that buck
they're the
fever
guys.
plays in your favor, huh?
And then afterwards, I'd always go, hey, I thought it was my turn.
Yeah, that was mine. What are you doing? What'd you do with your brass?
So, yeah, I mean, it was a great career, but 20 years was too long doing that kind of work. So I look at it kind of back to your thing with the dirty politician. And our colonel shut down our unit for safety reasons during that whole congressional hearing thing, and when it really blew up. And that was the decision he made. Kind of, it was a little bit of an appeasement, but it was protecting some of the guys we had, you know. And nobody was in the middle of something, but still, you know. And you know, we had a small unit, so you know, I knew everything that was going on and all those things. But we still had our unit shut down, so the dirty politician got his way.
Yeah, he still won.
Even though, well, the hearings came up for his bill on trying to do away with our unit, and we made it known because we have the allies. Obviously, there's political people that are allies to our department, and they let us know some things on the inside that were going on. So we intentionally allowed for that corrupt politician to know that we were going to have the ADA that was representing that case testify how he called him
Nice.
and was trying to get all the cases dismissed. And so it was going to reveal his corruption. So all of a sudden he dropped his bill. So the bill never got passed. It never got past committee, and because we let him know that he was going to testify, and also he won anyway because our colonel shut the unit down temporarily during that time. So yeah, that was a hard thing to go through, and that happened in 2016, and it seems like yesterday. But the other thing is, when you retire, you can write a book. See, you know, you're
That's
not allowed
right.
to have a voice. You know, it's kind of like that young fellow in Missouri, the hands up don't shoot. You know, the city was burning down, and that young police officer couldn't say his side of the story because that's
That's
how it
right.
is. You got to rely on your supervisors to say even a little. And so that city's burning down, and it turns out, you know, that hands up don't shoot was just a big lie.
I
And
actually
that's the
used
kind of
to
stuff, you know, that.
discuss that. I would go through that affidavit in a crime scene class I taught, showing the difference between what the lab saw and what everybody else saw, and comparing, you can compare crime scene collected data to statements, and I would use that to show that that guy was so screwed. And he still haven't heard from him since. I guarantee he can't be a cop anymore. You
Yeah,
know,
oh, there's no
it's
question. I felt so bad for that young. I knew he was a young officer, and this was before my thing happened, but I was, you know, I was on for quite a few years, and I've seen it happen to other officers, as you know, over the years. And it's just devastating to see the media play a part on a specific narrative. they want to push forward. And you know, just like when they were showing that the victim of that particular incident, they kept showing his seventh grade picture versus, you know, even news outlets that weren't so left were showing his seventh grade picture instead of how he looked the day he attacked the officer.
Or the video of him punching that lady in the bodega. Yeah, it's but so after this thing hit for you, I mean, I imagine that was the end of your UC life. I imagine you
Oh
couldn't go
yeah,
back to that. Yeah.
and because our unit, because I was a detective at the time, you know, I just obviously I reshifted gears. I worked, I was still part of the unit, but I only did the undercover work 20 years. And you know, I retired after 30 years, and so I just did the overt stuff, you know,
Yeah.
helping the guys in the field do search warrants and all the other things you do as an overt guy. And so yeah, but again, so I almost look at it as a favor, because as many times as against as I am, obviously, the corruption of the whole thing, but I am okay with the fact that it made me not do it. I was always like, okay, I'm done. I'm trying to get new guys to take my place. And
Yeah.
then a dangerous case would come, and we wouldn't want to put a guy that's brand new with a bunch of guys that are stealing cars and they're felons and doing, you know, and actually I wasn't going to do the Allagash case. And but because there was no cell phones, you know, you're always way out in the woods with no communication. And we worked our cases alone.
Yeah.
So our covert guys, some of the states have a takedown team handy. You know, you got three or four guys with ARs sleeping in a tent, you know, a mile from you. And some covert units have the money to do that kind of thing. The state of Maine, when you were working a case, you were either teamed up with somebody or you're by yourself. And
Wow.
I worked by myself most of the, well, actually every case, but I think one, over the 20 years I worked by
That's
myself.
living on the edge. That's
Well,
and
you're living in a, I think I told you this too. The Hollywood version of working undercover is it's a little glamorous, but if
way
you've seen the
different.
places I slept in those 20 years of doing it, I mean, I remember waking up in the middle of the night just scratching all over with fleas all over me from the guy, the
Oh
couch I was
yeah.
sleeping on was flea infested.
Oh, yep. Oh man.
Let
Yeah,
alone
they that
this.
doesn't play as well in the
Yeah.
theater.
Oh, you can't smell the cat urine in the theater
Yeah, well,
if you're watching the movie.
I can that actually just brings back such memories. I can smell and see exactly where I just yeah. I was wondering though. I know if I remember correctly, on the federal side there was like they would have check-ins. Like the UCs would have to do annual or biannual check-ins. With like psychologists or somebody I guess just to kind of do a treat, not a treatment, but just see if every, if the balance is still there, you know, if it's not wearing on them too much. Did you guys ever have any of that sort of,
No, so I'm the way I am probably because I mean, at least I have an excuse.
Yeah. And I'm, but the, yeah, I'm the, but the, yeah, the stress of doing that over and over again for 20 years, that takes, that's gotta take a lot you get used to, I guess you get used to it. That's why I said in the beginning there, I know I would not have worked out in that capacity. I just don't have it mentally. I know I just couldn't do the
No,
long term UC.
yeah, I don't want to brag and say I have it mentally, because I think it's a cumulative, just like, you know, an officer that deals with a lot of dead bodies. Like we've all, like, and I've had my fair share of, you know, children drowning or getting killed in an ATV accident where I've had to witness a child's body or hold a child's body. And it is a cumulative. It is, it does take a toll, and same with the undercover work. There is a psyche cost, and you know, I still go into a restaurant to this day, and I case the room for faces, and I'm not trying to do it. I don't even try to do it on purpose, but I catch myself doing it, and it's like, no, I'm nowhere near where I worked. I'm in the state,
Yeah, that's
1,800 miles away. I think I'm all right.
yeah, that's it's funny. It's like the cost of working those cases, especially the child exploitation stuff like that. It's,
Right.
and then you know going anywhere with your kids, you're just like eyeballing everybody. And
Right. Oh
that's
yeah. No, I
I'm like, that's okay. Everybody's an axe murderer until they prove otherwise. And I'm perfectly fine with that kind of paranoia.
that is law enforcement does are in a group of being very cynical to here I am a Christian, a follower of Christ, and you're there's that stereotype of you want to love on everybody, but I'm very cynical. Yeah, you're a bad guy or prove me otherwise.
Yeah, you're guilty. Everybody's guilty of something. Yeah, I'll smile and shake your hand, but I know there's a deep, dark secret there someplace.
That just comes with that law enforcement psyche, I guess.
But yeah, we've been going about an hour. I want you to talk about the book. I mean, we've been referring to the book here and there, but is there a it, it's Is there what is the what is, if you had to give one thing, what is the one thing that will immediately draw somebody? What do they have to get your book to read about?
Well, there's lots of great stories
Yeah,
in
it's
the
a fun
book,
read.
but the why it is so good, it's not because of these experiences I've lived through. The guy that co-wrote it with me, Darren Worcester, did an outstanding job. And you see this in some books where that are well written, but Darren Worcester did an absolutely excellent job of putting the reader in the situation, because I read the chapters that I wrote, and I am not kidding at all when I say this. I actually experience a little PTSD in some of the events because they are so, they just put the reader in that situation. You talked about, I could smell that when you said the cat urine.
Oh yeah.
Darren Worcester did a job, did such a great job at doing what a real writer does, of putting the reader there. He didn't change any of the stories, but he puts you there. He puts you in the situation. And so all the chapters, all the way up through, he does an outstanding job of putting the reader there. And that's what makes it a good read. And the
Yeah.
stories are good too. The stories are all kinds of different things. Like I said, there's funny things, there's some drama, there's some situations that are very iffy, that I didn't think I was going to walk away from.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I'll tell you, it does it grabs you from the start. I mean, that first introduction, I mean, you lay out in a very honest and brutal sense where you came from. And it's and that like you said, there was a that the it's very interesting how you landed on the LEO side given your the way you came up. And you're absolutely right. I mean, in what you wrote, it built you perfectly for the UC world. But you're right. I mean, I don't know if it's you or if it's Darren, but that set the context to everything you go through, it's well done. It's definitely worth a read.
I'm really happy with it, and I'm really happy the way he had that ability to put the reader there. That would be my biggest point that I'd like to share with anybody interested in reading the book. Plus, it's just an ex I think it's an exciting read, because of that reason.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And you guys put it together. It came out really well. Where can everybody find you? Do you do social media or?
No, I have a LinkedIn account. That's it.
Yeah,
I'm not a social media guy.
Given your background, I completely understand. I probably wouldn't be either. Yeah, it's been 20 years trying to avoid the camera to put myself right on camera.
Everybody always used to ask me, "How come you're not on Northwood's Law?" And I'd be like, "Well, I got a face for radio." I was my go-to line,
I got some background. I got some people that'd be mad at me. Yep. But that's great. Well, thank you for joining me. I think this is probably a pretty good place to wrap, but you got any plans? Any other books coming out? Any other ideas?
Oh, not really a book writer, but I do have a bunch of stories, but I don't know if I'm going to be putting them down anytime soon. Right now, I'm taking on this position of being a international house parent, for international kids, and And you know, that's a challenge. Being, I don't know if anybody understands what that is, but you're basically raising kids again.
Yeah. And we talked about that. You know, I guess we'll pause wrapping here for a minute, because that is really interesting. How and when I've as we talked about, you said that you have some Chinese kids, some Japanese kids, college age, so they're going into college.
All
How
right.
is it? Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
This is high school,
Okay,
maybe,
high school
but
guys.
they
Okay.
will be going into college. Yeah. And my job is to just, encourage them and raise them. And it's the school I'm working for is a private school, and it's very focused on, raising up a kid and with the biblical standard. And it is a challenge with the language barrier, but the kids have to know English to come to this school. And even though it's pretty broken English, it's actually exciting. We're in our third week of it right now, and it's been a challenge, but it's been great.
Yeah, and what I was wondering, what I wanted to know is, how is it seeing somebody from another country experience America? Like, is that, how's that feel? Because
It would
I think that'd
not.
be an amazing perspective.
It is amazing. Well, these three Chinese boys, we've been rolling because they'd never had peanut butter before. And here, my wife made egg sandwiches for them, and we see the one kid's putting peanut butter on the egg sandwich because he loves it so much. And
Ooh.
he wanted to put it on his spaghetti, and
Oh
it's like,
man,
whoa, hold on here.
that's going
Oh yeah,
hard.
we gave them ice cream for the first time they ever had ice cream. And of course, down here in Florida, how it's dripping off the cone, so he's going at it as fast as he
Just trying to keep up, kid. Just keeping
can.
up.
Yeah, so there's been some really funny good times with these guys, and
Oh yeah.
we've only had them a couple weeks. My wife's in the background here giving me the we only
Yeah.
had them 2 weeks. We
Two
got them at the
weeks.
airport. Yeah, so
Wow.
it's been fun.
That's interesting. That's a very cool thing. So I wish you luck with that. And I wish you
Yeah.
luck with the book.
Yeah,
Thanks for joining me. And I guess I'll let you go.
okay.
I guess everybody, I'll wrap it up here. Don't forget, you like and subscribe. We get to take out an internet troll. You give me a 5-star rating, we detonate internet trolls. So
I
remember,
love that.
this is public service right here. So,
And you can get the book on Amazon. Did I answer your question?
I
I might
forgot to ask
not.
you about that.
Oh
But
no,
yeah,
I thought you said
it's
where can you get your book, and I didn't
okay.
answer.
I'm staring at it right now. Let's go for a ride. Outstanding look into the life of a game warden, and not only that, but the covert operation side. Fantastic read, and I suggest everybody go take a look. And Bill, thank you, and I will talk to you next week, everybody.